The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
All right, Craig, thank you. 4:06 on the Central Coast. It is Wednesday, November 30th. Where'd the month go? 2022. I'm Dave Congleton. Thanks for hanging out with us. Brent Burchett from the Farm Bureau is going to be with us tomorrow. On Friday, Elizabeth Barrett, the reluctant therapist, is back. I don't know. I kind of find it troubling. There's a new article out that says that more and more Americans, in particular, are just preferring to be alone. We don't want to be with other people, not even our partners. We just want to be by ourselves. It has nothing to do with COVID. This is a trend that started about 10 years ago. Anyway, Elizabeth will explain. It is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. This hour, it has been far too long between visits with Mr. Gordon Mullen, who might just be the best friend Israel ever had. Gordon, how are you?
I am well, Dave. Thank you very much.
Nice to see you. I want to hear a little bit about your trip, and also we'll talk a little bit about Israel. That's the agenda for the hour.
Yes, it is. So that get wound up, folks. I'll be defending Israel. So we hope that there's good. That'll be in later on, but right now we're talking about...
A lot of people defend Israel. It's not like you're the only one.
Actually, I know. I want somebody to come in and... You know, on the other side. That's always more fun.
We can set that up. We can make that happen for you.
We'll have it.
So, but I want to hear about your trip. You've been there once before.
I did. Right. Nancy, my wife, and I were there pre-COVID. I guess it's 4 years ago now, for a three-week trip. And this time, and after that, I got really even more enthusiastic about Israel. I've always been a big supporter. I've been a big, I'm associated with an organization called Stand With Us.
And how long does this date back?
That'd be 6 years now. And I've had a booth at Farmers Market supporting Israel for, 6 years, except for COVID. Shut down the Farmers Market.
But what sparked your passionate support for Israel? Was there a particular incident?
Well, not a particular incident. It's just that and my opinion is, and my readings, my understanding and discussions, the world treats Israel differently than they treat any other country. There's a lot of different reasons why that may be the case. A lot of it surely is because they're Jews and anti-Semitism is alive and well in the world today. But maybe there are other reasons that it's hard to discern.
So when you went for the first time, was Israel what you expected it to be?
Nancy and I, we rented a car and we did our own wanderings, which was entertaining. But then we also spent 10 days with a Stand With Us group, and we went to a lot of places that we would not have otherwise been. For example, we went down next to the Gaza Strip and listened to a presentation by the Israeli Defense Force, IDF, colonel.
You're romantic with you. You take your wife to all the best places.
Exactly. Yeah. We spent a whole day down there next to the border in the India lot. Well, this town just 2 kilometers, say, from Gaza, where on every block has this little cement building. And I say, what's that? And this guy said, that's our air raid shelters. When Gaza starts shooting rockets, all the sirens go off when we run to the closest one.
Yeah.
And we have to have one on every block because of the frequency of Gaza shooting rockets at us.
But now this time you went back a second time by yourself, but you went for a month.
No, I went with a buddy, buddy of mine. But we went for a month. It was the linchpin of the time that I went there was to spend time on an Israeli Defense Force base. called it's an organization called Volunteers for Israel. It's something I signed up for and got approved to do just about 4 months before COVID, and then the whole thing fell apart. And so I've been waiting for them to open up, and they did in the spring, but I didn't want to go there in the summer, so I waited till now. And we spent a week on the Israeli Defense Force base. I got this fancy sit-dancy T-shirt.
He's wearing a T-shirt.
It's in the back. It says Israeli Defense. Israeli Commandos. It was actually the base where they train Israeli Commandos. And that was fascinating. We stayed with them, slept in the barracks, ate with them. Our purpose there was to not only learn about them, but to help out. And I say help out. We're not soldiers. They're not going to give us a gun. So we were help out and doing some logistic stuff, you know.
Such as?
Oh, sorting things, counting things, you know, mundane work that perhaps, hopefully, the soldiers would be better use of their time by not doing. They let us do it. So we did it, happily so. That consumed, 6-7 hours a day. And intermittently at all the times, I fell into a habit of, of these guys, they're young. They're 19, 24, 25, say. And they were constantly... In a fascinating thing, 75%, 80% or so were walking around carrying a machine gun.
Yeah. If they lose their gun, they're in serious trouble.
Well, part of the training is to indeed carry your gun with you always.
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 Yep.
Well, not into the shower, but everywhere else. Yes.
Maybe close. I don't know.
I'm not quite sure what they do in their bunk, but, I didn't ask that. But all the rest of the time, they're carrying around this gun.
I saw that in Tel Aviv when we took the train from Tel Aviv to Haifa at the train station, on the train, in the train station of Haifa. All these young men and women in uniform, kind of the color of the shirt you're wearing, and they all had their guns. And this guy we were traveling with said that these soldiers are in very serious trouble if anything happens to that gun.
Yes, absolutely. That's what they're trained to do. Training is all day. It's immense. We're with the commandos. These guys are... These are the guys who, when bad things happen at the border, they're the first to go. So these guys are.
And remind me, Gordon, it's mandatory military service for the young people?
It is. Okay. It is. Albeit there are, and I ran into a couple near the Dead Sea. They went into alternate services. They were in nonprofits. So they were sort of, I don't know, they said, I'm not going to participate in the
military. But some kind of compulsory service is required.
Also, there's another group. Much larger group is the Harari, the ultra-Orthodox Jews. They do not have to go. Some do. Huh. There are actually some groups, and I met a couple of guys who, obviously, clearly were Harari. I mean, they were in uniform. But, you could tell. That they're Harari, and they claim, yes, we were. Most of them spoke English to a degree. Indeed, many of them I met were from the United States, lone soldiers. Sometimes their parents had come over to Israel earlier, and some of them we called lone soldiers. They came to Israel on their own because that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to protect Israel.
Gordon Mullen on this broadcast, just back from Israel, his second time there. So what insights did you take away about Israel now that you spent some time with the military? It had to be a different experience than your first visit.
I had a little bit of military stuff. That's what intrigued me. But the soldiers and talking with them and why they're there and what is a soldier's life like. I really enjoy being able to walk up to a group of soldiers that just kind of stand there, and sure enough, a couple seconds later, they'd look over to me and say, "Who are you? Why are you here?
Yeah.
Where are you from?"
Yeah.
And so we just start talking. You know, I told him I was Volunteers Israel and yada, yada, yada.
You have the T-shirt on.
And I had the T-shirt on. Well, they actually put us in a uniform very similar to theirs, shirt and pants. We weren't carrying anything else. We didn't hold ourselves out. We were not in the military. But imagine that you're on a base. Unless you're in a uniform, they want to know who the heck you are.
Yeah.
So that was a way of discerning for the military, because you can't just walk in the base. We had to be vetted in order to get in the first place.
Israel struck me as a very security-conscious country for obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons. More and more now. And recently, just last week, cars trying to run over Jews happened in Tel Aviv. It happened in Jerusalem just recently. Stabbings. Random stabbings. It's starting to proliferate. We can get into why that may be occurring now. But that certainly the time I spent in on an IDF base was the highlight of my time. But it's lost the allure of sleeping in bunk beds.
Aren't you a little old for that?
Yeah, I am a little old for that. But, you know, I can still do it. I can still do it.
Are you going to go back? Would you go back to Israel again?
In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. I look forward to being able to go back at some later time.
Yeah. All right. We will continue the conversation with Gordon Mullen, talking about his visit to Israel and then the larger issues involving Israel currently. A lot to cover. Well, we'll do it. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. If you haven't figured it out by now, Gordon Mullen is very supportive of Israel. He's now been two times, and the second time, this sounds kind of different. So you were on the IDF base. Was that difficult to get accepted for this program?
Yes. In order to get in there, you got to be vetted. So you fill out applications, you get letters of support or recommendation, however you call it, from people, rabbis, who always fit the bill in this case.
A rabbi will do, sure.
A few rabbis, yeah. I know some few rabbis, so I got that. And then one from Stand With Us. They're very well known in Israel and the United States. So, yeah.
So it sounds like you want to go back. What haven't you done in Israel that you would like to do?
Well, I would go back to stay at an IDF base again. There were two guys there that had done it five times. That was their fifth time. They liked it. They liked doing it. I liked doing it. I liked spending time with the soldiers.
That's the main thing. I mean, the work itself was fine.
Yeah.
But you got to interact with the soldiers.
Well, I got to play with some guns, not loaded guns.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got to. But you may imagine there's really three sections of the base. Materially, there's where the guns are, where the food is, and there's where everything else is. So we did the latter. But they did take us over where all the guns are, and I got some pictures of me holding all these different guns. And
did they want to know anything about you since you're an American? Were they asking you any kind of questions?
Oh, yeah. But mainly, you know, why are you here?
Yeah.
Why are you here? And I said, support Israel, you know, and I come here. And they were very welcoming that I would spend the time, effort, trouble, money to come here just to support them.
So you paid all your own expenses?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Except, well, lodging on the base, lodging and food on the base
the
was
bunk
free.
Bed.
And the food. It was pretty good, too.
Were you treated as soldiers?
No. No. We definitely were not soldiers.
So you could kind of do your own thing.
Yeah, in the evening we did our own thing. There was some other thing. They had sort of a thing set up for us, just the 15 of us. But we were, you know, we were free to walk around. Within this big box, if you will, you get outside the box, and that's where all the soldiers go for training. Literally, because it was a commando base, I don't think there was really any time of the day or night that I couldn't hear gunfire. Mm. Training.
Oh, training.
Training, yeah. So they do a lot of that.
I was just, I mean, we were there three full days, but I was impressed by their embrace of security, again, for obvious reasons. But there's military everywhere, police everywhere. Sure. They're friendly, but they're keeping an eye on you.
They are.
You felt safe. I felt safe.
And they you know, as you may know, when you go to the training, you had to run through stuff through the scanner.
Yep.
I lost one of my favorite knives there.
They take it very serious.
Yeah, they do. And that's fair enough. I didn't complain at all. I had to show the guy how to use it. So.
But you can also go to Israel just as a tourist.
Sure.
And it's still worthwhile.
And I spent most of my time doing just that.
Mm. Talk a little bit about Jerusalem, because I think you and I agree Tel Aviv is fine, but it's just a city on the beach.
It's just another city on the beach.
Yeah, but Jerusalem...
I did go up to David Ben-Gurion's home in Tel Aviv. They have it as a kind of little museum. So I did go into Tel Aviv from there. We stayed in Jaffo, or Jaffa, depending on how, whether it's the...
That's supposed to be a place to go.
Well, yeah, because it's, again, another old city. It was the Ottoman Empire administrative area, city, if you will. So that I liked old cities. It was similar to... in many ways, to the old city of Jerusalem, where we stayed for 5 days. We stayed in the youngest hotel in the old city, built in the 1830s.
That's the youngest hotel.
Yes.
Is the 1830s.
It built in the old city. There's all sorts of new ones outside, but I wanted to stay in the old city for a while.
How do you describe Jerusalem to people?
It was, well, aside from the guys who try to sell you stuff, I mean,
they're everywhere.
You got to get past them. And they're in these little tiny narrow streets. But you could go around them after a while. You figure out how to get around them and then just ignore them, and that's fine. You know, they're not going to jump you or anything.
Tell me, I used the word historic. I mean, regardless of where you are on the religious spectrum, and for me, it's not that much, but even I was impressed by the sense of history.
Amen.
In that city.
Amen. I mean, you got to know, it's a 3,000-year-old city. I mean, knowing that people have been walking there for 3,000 years, if you walked around in the old city, and you notice these doorways on these little streets, and they come to my shoulders, you know, the height of the doors. People were much, much smaller. And occasionally there would be a door open and they get to peek in a bit and see a little bit what, you know,
in this country, we care about buildings that are a couple hundred years old, which is fine. But over there, as you mentioned, thousands of years.
Yes, yes, yes.
They mock us.
And when there are a number of older cities, Sfat in the north, where I again spent a few days, is almost as old as Jerusalem and very similar. That is to say, these old cities, all built out of the stone, the local stone.
The guy was explaining to me it's because, at least in Jerusalem, because of the British. The design of the buildings in Jerusalem had to do with the British occupation.
Well,
they wanted homogeny among the buildings.
You mean the newer buildings built when the British were there, the British mandate? But
exactly.
that's mid early 20th century.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking. You know, you and I are talking about something 3,000 years old.
Yeah.
That's what they built in these old stone. But the Israeli government has kind of kept that, particularly in Israel, and other places that. Using stone, and it's called Jerusalem stone, light brown, is a wonderful building tool.
Everything is light brown.
Yeah. It's just a little boring, but it kind of keeps that continuity with everywhere. But as you know, there's these high rises are everywhere.
That's the new thing. They're going up.
They're going up.
Up and up and up.
Yep. It's accepted. We would, in here in San Luis, we would get in a great kerfuffle if we try and build something more than four stories. There, 30 is nothing.
All right. Gordon Mullen is just back from Israel. We are off to California Headline News and ABC Radio News. Craig updates with Time Saver Traffic and Weather Together. We'll continue our conversation with Gordon and get his take about issues Israel is facing and how that affects us. I'm Dave Congleton. Good to be with you. Happy Wednesday. KVC News Talk time is now 4:34. I'm Dave Congleton, repeating the top local story of the afternoon. As far as I can discern, the county clerk recorder has announced that no new counting of ballots will take place before December 8th. We don't know why, and we're trying to get details. Mike Nolan, attorney, will join us tomorrow to try to help us figure out what's going on. It is a Dave Congleton show, always your hometown radio talk show. I bet they don't have elections like this in Israel, Gordon Mullen.
They have a lot of elections in Israel. This is the second election they just had, finished 2 weeks ago. Second election this year for the Knesset, the national government.
And do they get the results right away, or do they have to wait a month?
Well, they counted the ballots quickly. In Israel, the Knesset, the national parliament, if you will, has a slightly different structure. It has a different, entirely different structure than what we have. You vote for parties. Then the party which gets the 120 seats, they get allotted the number of seats depending upon how many votes they get. You have to get 3.25% of the votes for your party, even to get any seats, but then it's allotted as to the number of votes your party got. So there's 120 seats. Therefore, in order to form a coalition government, you got to have 61 seats. Hmm. And Benjamin Netanyahu.
He's back. He's back.
He is back for the third time. He won and he defeated and won and defeated. And now he's won again. He's the longest serving prime minister.
And how did he manage to come back? What happened?
He is the consummate politician fox, in my view. You come back because you offer to people what they want, and that in Israel is safety. You got to keep in mind in Israel, Israeli politicians and Israeli economy even is, compared to us, far more right than we are in America. Just to give you an example, the Labour Party, which was the predominant party from the beginning of Israel till 15, 20 years ago, now has four seats, four. That's it, out of 120. So the electorate has moved right. And yes, it's mainly to do with security. That's the ultimate criteria. Can this government keep me safe? Keep in mind, on a regular basis, Palestinians, non-Israelis, run over the Jews in Tel Aviv. They come up and they stab people. You can see it. You can see these on video, to somebody walking up and stabbing people. And the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, has had to go into the territories, Judea and Samaria, better known as some people call them occupied territories. I call them disputed territories. We can get into that if anybody wants to call in. But they've had it's increased recently. The thought is, from my readings, is that Mahmoud Abbas, who is in his 17th year of a four-year...
17th year of a four-year?
Four-year term, yes. Okay. is getting a little long in the tooth. He's 80-something. He's older than Biden, by God. And health isn't good. And when he dies, there's going to be a fight as to who's going to be able to take over. Now, the fight is going to be within the various factions of the the Palestinians, the Palestinian Authority, Hamas, Hezbollah, all these people will be vying for positions. And the way that it's thought, again, who would come out on top is the one which supports the greatest amount of killing of Israelis. That's how you win. Keep in mind, if you go kill an Israeli, they'll name a school after you. And the Palestinian Authority will give money to your family. So, and your family will be praised, and they'll be on television, and mothers will say, thank you, thanks to my son who did this. You know, he's in heaven now. This Allah,
so
Allah be praised.
What will happen to Israel with Netanyahu back in charge?
I'm pretty confident he's going to take a harder line. He's going to have to. And that means more intervention in the West Bank. And that means there's going to be more condemnation from outside of Israel. But you cannot allow one people to come in and kill the other. Keep in mind that the Palestinian Authority runs everything in their area of the West Bank. The Oslo Accords, divvied up Judea and Samaria after the 67 war. After Israel took over that area in the early 90s, there was the Oslo Accords. And Palestinian Authority was given the sanction to run Area A. They run it. They control it. It's all them. And that's where the vast majority of the Palestinians, non-Jews, live. But there's a lot of Jews, a few, who live within that territory as well, like in Hebron. And so whatever goes on there is up to the Palestinian Authority to deal with, to run. They run it. And they do a terrible job.
Gordon Mullen back on this broadcast, recently returned from Israel, spent a month there, talking a little bit about his experiences, a little bit about Israel. Can you explain to me why the Abraham Accords are such a big deal? Because here, okay, we've normalized the relations between the State of Israel and Morocco and Sudan. I'm all for diplomacy, and I believe in giving diplomatic kudos where they're due, but it's Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan?
The Arab Emirates. That's the biggie prize. That's the big prize.
Sure, but what about all the other places that are still a threat to Israel?
That's a good thing. Let's talk about the threat to Israel. Where is that? Lebanon, because it's run by Hezbollah.
Sure.
Syria.
Iran?
Because of Iran. Well, Iran funds everybody.
Yeah.
And the Gaza Strip, which is Hamas, which is also funded by Iran. So those places aren't going to, they are proxies for Iran. But the Abraham Accords opened up. Some Arab countries have now said, yes, we'll have diplomatic relations to you. Saudi Arabia, and this is a big deal, now allows Israeli LL to fly over Saudi Arabia. That's a big deal.
All right, I'll take that.
Yeah, they're opening up slowly. There's no way they can just flip a switch and all their people. They've been propagandizing their own people for decades.
I guess so. The question is whether or not if the Abraham Accords really changes the relationships between the significant powers that surround Israel.
Well, significant powers, the other two are Jordan and Egypt. They've signed peace treaties long ago.
Right.
They're making inroads. Israel has accommodations and relationships with both Jordan and Egypt. Still, the mullahs, it's not a popular thing to for a politician in either country to embrace Israel. The Arab street still doesn't appreciate it. It's the Arab street, the mosques, the schools still teach Jews are filthy, Jews are bad, Jews control everything. That's still in it. And like the Palestinian Authority, that's what they teach their children in Hebron.
So it's real indoctrination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funded by the UN, sadly. The UN is a barrier to peace.
How so?
Well, they fund the Palestinian Authority, and the United States puts money, and so does Europe, into funding the PA. The UN has two agencies which take care of those people who've been displaced during war. One takes care of all the other people in the world and has been doing it for the last 40 years. Then there's a thing called UNRWA. It's a French, so I can't remember what it actually says. But nonetheless, all they care about, all they take care of, is the Palestinians and have been since 1967. That's all they do. They get treated differently than all the refugees in the rest of the world. In Palestine, they consider refugees to be not only the refugees who left Israel, for the most part voluntarily, in 67, but their children and their children's children. There's been no effort in the Middle East to settle these people. They keep them separate, to keep it fomented, to keep them hating Israel.
Gordon Mullen on this broadcast. We'll come back for our final segment as we talk about Israel. I'm Dave Congleton on AM 920 FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. We're talking Israel with Gordon Mullen. If you want to join us, please do. We would need to hear from you now, though. 805-543-8830 is our number. Alan's in St. Louis on KVEC. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Gordon.
Hey.
I love this topic. I wanted to answer more of Dave's question about what does this accord mean when we have countries we don't think too much seriously about, like Morocco and Bahrain. Morocco is a good example of this benefit. They have a very strong and historically an extremely strong Jewish community. We're talking over many centuries. They were a seat of serious learning going on at that time. And just having this accord has to make it easier on the Jewish community there.
But my point is simply, and I'm not looking here for a debate, but my point is simply, it's not like Morocco was rattling their sabers, Gordon, and
no.
saying, let's invade Israel.
True enough.
Right. Is Israel any safer now than it was pre-Abraham Accords?
Here's the big deal. That what they're doing is Israel's helping to build a coalition against Iran. All these other, not all these other countries, but certainly the United Arab Emirate, Saudi Arabia, are under the threat of Iran. Here's the deal. If and when we, and I say U.S., Joe Biden, I hope you're listening, allow Iran to get the bomb, here's what's going to happen. Here's my prediction. Saudi Arabia and Egypt will say, oh my God, Iran's got the bomb, I got to get the bomb. Where are they going to get the bomb? Keep in mind, Iran is Shia. The most of the world, Saudi Arabia and Egypt, are Sunni. Where are they going to get the bomb? They're going to go to Pakistan.
All right. Alan, anything else?
Yes. In terms of with the issues we have with Saudi Arabia and the way they treat people, the more influence you can have from the outside, from Israel included, the better chance of doing some, shall we say, repair work or change in the culture.
Yeah.
All right. Here.
Alan,
here.
Fair enough. Thanks for the call. Lee is in Atascadero on KVEC. Hi, Lee.
Hello. How
Hi.
Are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I went to Israel in 2011, and our tour was really doing just the history of Israel, and we hit a lot of the IDF bases and visited because our tour guide knew some of the commanders personally. And we were up on the Golani Heights, and we were able to look down on one side. You could see Lebanon, and on the other side, Syria. And just to see how close the enemies are there, and they had a building that had been just pitted horrifically with, you know, the incoming fire, and it was just something to see how people like this have to live. With regards to the soldiers, you know, a lot of them have to go off base and work. The gentleman that's with you today,
Gordon.
Was he with SAR L program?
Yes, right.
Okay, all right. My husband and I were looking at that at one time.
It's wonderful. It Volunteers for Israel is simply the North American feeder, if you will, to SAR L.
Lee, is there a question here?
I just wanted to make one more, not a question per se, but I went in to get a hamburger, and there was a young soldier. They had to work in order to provide some of their needs while on base. But anyways, he came up to me, and then he stopped, and he was looking over my head, and I wondered why he wasn't taking my order. And I looked behind me, and I could see in the window a guy on a motorcycle, and he was slowly getting off and just, you know, walking back and forth, and he just, the guy that was to take my order still, it was like about 3 minutes, but it felt much longer. And I'm wondering if I should lay down on the floor and back. But anyways, eventually the guy took off. But it's just, and you know where you say they always have to have their guns with them.
Yes.
And so it's just a really different way to live.
It is.
It is.
It is. All right, Lee, thank you very much for calling in and sharing that. We go to Dania in Arroyo Grande on KVEC. Hi, Dania.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
We're good. Dana, how are you?
I just wanted to give you a quick thank you for having Gordon on your program, and a thank you to Gordon for the amazing work he does with Stand With Us. As a mother of Jewish children, we suffer the fallout, especially from the conflict, you know, blowing up recently. My kids get harassed on social media and such for being Jewish, and it's just so important to get another perspective out there, because our media can be so biased in their presentation of Israel and all the facts. So I just wanted to say thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
We got Garth in Atascadero. Hey, Garth.
Hey, David.
Hey, Gordon.
Hi.
Cool. Gordon, in your travels, I'm wondering if you happen to meander over to Gaza, which is a great wasteland and ruin, you know, ruins of an urban area holding more than 1.8 million people. A majority of them were exiles from present-day Israel. I'm wondering if you had a chance to
Have you been to
that.
Gaza? Have you been?
Have I been into Gaza? No, I've been next to Gaza.
Mm-hmm. Well, during Israel's operation, you know, Protective Shield in the summer of 2014, you know, Israel claims it has the right to had the right to defend itself, you know, with, you know, an American propaganda.
Of course it does.
Well, anybody has the right to defend themselves, but you've completely twisted the narrative around. Israel is the oppressor. The Palestinian people are the people that we should be supporting. Now,
I disagree,
Israel,
but okay.
Israel's been declared an apartheid state by the number one Israeli human rights organization, B'Tselem. So are you going to argue that point?
Yes, absolutely. I've
Why?
Been there. It's not an apartheid state. I've been there. I know, by definition, it's not an apartheid state.
But aren't they walled off? I've been there, too. Jerusalem is a whole separate community.
Jerusalem?
Yeah,
what do you mean, Jerusalem?
An open-air
I don't understand
prison,
Jerusalem.
Basically.
You can walk in and out.
Well, there's a security checkpoint when we went into the West Bank.
Sure. Yes, it is. But
okay.
The best West Bank is not in Israel. Neither is Gaza.
Wow.
So if I came and seized your house and pushed you out and took it over, that would be fine with you, Gordon?
You're trying to use that as an analogy, and that is not what occurred.
Yeah, I am using that as an analogy.
And that is not what occurred in 1948.
What occurred in 1948, you're saying?
Well, in 1948, the State of Israel was created by the UN, and when that happened, five Arab armies invaded Israel. Israel accepted the boundaries given by the UN. The surrounding countries did not.
I don't have this kind of time.
I don't have
this kind of time.
No, we don't have that kind of time.
The entire area between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River is organized under, you know, one single principle, and that's just advancing and cementing the supremacy of one group, and that's, you know, Israelis over Palestinians.
We'll have to bring the two of you in together at some point to have a conversation.
I disagree.
We don't have that kind of time. Garth, but thank you, though, for calling in and raising those points. Last call goes to Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hi. Hi. First of all, I wanted to thank Gordon because he was right on with everything that he brought forth. And Garth, I just want you to know that you need to take a history lesson. I've been to Israel. It's not an apartheid state, and by no way that Israel is an oppressor and all that. You need to go to Israel, and you need to see who lives in Israel and how the Arabs live there, the Christians live there, the Jews live there. And you need to get your history straight, because what you are doing right now is propaganda that is completely false.
Thank you for saying that. You're absolutely right.
Thank you, Gordon, and keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a great job, and we need to stop this anti-Semitic propaganda. And the reason there's no peace in the Middle East is because the countries around Israel want to, what do they say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
Yep.
If you grow up teaching your kids to hate Jews, to kill Jews, and to continue this horrible propaganda, how can you have peace with people? Little kids in kindergarten and from the time they're raised are taught to hate Jews. Now, how do you have peace with those kind of people? Thank you, Gordon, for everything you do.
Thank you very much. I'm honored.
I invited you on the show. How about me?
Well,
thank you, Sam.
There's a way of looking at it that I summarize it. If all the Palestinians and the Hezbollah and if Israel laid down their arms, they'd all be killed. If Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran and the surrounding Arabs and Palestinian Authority laid down their arms, there would be peace. It's as simple as that.
But at what price?
Well, what price? They would be much freer. The reason that Israel must continue to have a military presence in the West Bank is because they want to kill Jews. They say they want to kill Jews, and they do.
Gordon Mullen, welcome back. Nice job. I got about 30 seconds for a final thought.
Well, the Accords, I heard it. It's a wonderful little piece that I liked. Abraham Accords normalized relationship there. Peace with the Emirates is a 5-foot putt. Peace with the Saudis is a 30-foot putt. And peace with the Palestinians is a hole-in-one through a brick wall.
Gordon, thank you. We appreciate the conversation.
All righty.
Off we go. We got news and traffic and weather. Stick around. We're only halfway through the broadcast today. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. We'll be back after the news.
The 920 KBEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slow County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kbec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111-911.